Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's November the 8th, 2007. Mary Stareth, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, will join me in approximately 1 hour from now to examine a series of issues that are of interest to us today, including the following. Pat Robertson has endorsed Rudolph Giuliani. What does the Constitution Party have to say about this? We'll know in exactly 1 hour from now. You might imagine what the response is going to be. We'll hear about it specifically from Mary Stareth, once again the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party. Chris Saliza, The Washington Post, reports this story yesterday. That Pat Robertson has endorsed Rudolph Giuliani, deems him more than acceptable to people of faith. What faith, Mr. Robertson? It certainly would not seem to be the Christian faith. Nonetheless, the Washington Post tells us that Pat Robertson, one of the most influential figures in the social conservative movement, announced his support for Rudolph Giuliani's presidential bid this morning at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Robertson's support was coveted by several of the leading Republican candidates and provides Giuliani with a major boost as the former New York City mayor seeks to convince social conservatives that despite his position supporting abortion rights and homosexual rights, he is an acceptable choice as the GOP nominee. Following Robertson's formal announcement at the press club, the Washington Post reports that it had a chance to sit down with the Reverend and the candidate to further explore their relationship. Robertson and Giuliani have crossed paths several times during the course of their careers, but they were able to get to know one another better on a flight home from Israel in 2003. While Robertson has been heavily courted by a number of presidential candidates, most notably Mitt Romney in recent months, he decided to cast his lot with Giuliani in order to counter a movement among some evangelicals to support a third-party candidate if the former New York City mayor becomes the Republican nominee. Quote, I thought it was important for me to make clear that Rudolph Giuliani is more than acceptable to people of faith, said Robertson. Given the fractured nature of the process, I thought it was time to solidify around one candidate, unquote. Robertson insisted that while some on the fringe of the social conservative movement may see Giuliani as an unacceptable nominee, quote, the core know better, unquote. Robertson said that although he and Giuliani disagree on social issues, those disagreements pale into insignificance, quote-unquote, when measured against the import of the fight against global terrorism and radical Islam, quote, we need a man who sees clearly how to deal with that issue, unquote, said Robertson. For his part, Giuliani cited Robertson as simply the latest evidence that he shares large swaths of common ground with people of faith, emphasizing his work to rid Times Square of pornography, and his promise to appoint strict constructionists to the federal bench if elected president. Quote, if they look at my record, they are going to a lot more areas of agreement than disagreement, asserted Giuliani, noting that some of his opponents, whom he chose not to name, have their own weaknesses on issues important to social conservatives. The endorsement, says the Washington Post, will definitely slow Romney's momentum with social conservatives. Romney had recently secured the backing of conservative stalwarts Paul Weyrich and Bob Jones III, endorsements that seemed to strengthen his bid to become the electable conservative alternative to Giuliani. Romney had made no secret of his desire for Robertson's endorsement and has to be disappointed this morning. Robertson is widely viewed as one of the pillars of the religious right. He founded the Christian Broadcasting Network, the Christian Coalition, and Regent University in Virginia Beach. Robertson ran for president in 1988, finishing a surprising second in the Iowa caucuses before losing steam in later states. In recent years, Robertson has drawn considerable controversy for comments made about homosexuality. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mary Stareth, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, joins us in 1 hour from now. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Pinch me, Bill. I can't believe it. A few months ago, I couldn't even afford gas for my car. And here we are with season tickets on the 50-yard line.
I know what you mean, John. I remember the day you saw my new car and asked me if I robbed Bill Gates. Our lives sure have changed since we discovered DidYouRobBillGates.com.
I was struggling to make ends meet. Now I've got a new car and a college fund for Lisa when she graduates from high school next year. And I owe it all to you because you told me about DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Hey, John, we all win when the money problems disappear. I want to tell everybody because the more people we have on the success team, the better it works. It's hard for the little guy these days. We pool our resources to level the playing field.
So the more people that go to www.DidYouRobBillGates.com, the more cash for everybody. What a concept.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mary Sterrett, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, will join me in a little less than 1 hour from now to talk about a series of things, including this most curious story yesterday from the Washington Post on the fact that Pat Robertson has now endorsed Rudolph Giuliani. In May, the Washington Post reminds us, Alan Cooperman described Robertson as a member of, quote, an older generation of evangelical leaders, unquote, that includes the Reverend Billy Graham, psychologist James Dobson, and the Reverend D. James Kennedy, who are, quote, ailing or nearing retirement, unquote, and who are seeing their movement, quote, tugged in different directions by a new crop of activists. You know, it is quite clear that there is one bottom line on this whole story of Pat Robertson endorsing Rudolph Giuliani. It does not really matter to Robertson and his Christian Zionist friends what Rudolph Giuliani believes about abortion, what he believes about homosexuality, what he believes about gun grabbing and gun control, what he believes about an unconstitutional expansion of the role of the federal government in all kinds of things. The fact of the matter is that Rudolph Giuliani is a Zionist. Rudolph Giuliani is a clear tool of Jewish interests. Rudolph Giuliani, like most of the other major contenders in both of the major political parties, wants to expand the war on terror. Wants the United States to attack Iran on behalf of the nation of Israel. Wants the United States to continue its so-called crusade for its version of democracy in the Middle East. That's the bottom line, and of course my commentary some months ago for the American Free Press continues to resonate as we read this story with the Washington Post. If you go to my blog at Al Bawaba, you'll discover that, in fact, Rudolph Giuliani's war on the unborn has merged with Rudolph Giuliani's war on terror. And who are the people who are the recipients of these activities that are being promulgated by both of the major political parties in the war on terror? Quite clearly, it involves those who disagree with Israeli policy in the Middle East, those who disagree with the implementation of Zionist power also in the domestic American scene. It does not matter, of course, whether we're looking at this Israeli policy in the Middle East or we're looking at the overarching Jewish control of the American news media or what has happened to American culture under the infiltration of the Zionist juggernaut. The end result is obviously clear, and Pat Robertson's actions in endorsing Rudolph Giuliani simply underscore the completely bankrupt character of these so-called Christian right leaders. The Giuliani endorsement, I think, is a positive only in the sense that it underscores for everyone concerned, left, right, and center, the fact that the leaders of the Christian right, the mainstream leaders, the ones we've been talking about on the air, and who are often the subject of these articles in the Washington Post and the New York Times, are an absolutely morally, politically, theologically, culturally, and strategically a bankrupt group of people. And hopefully those of you who are in pews in Christian congregations and who go to Christian Sunday schools and who read Christian literature and count yourselves among the faithful will jettison these people and come up with some new leadership. That would seem to be the bottom line on what has happened in this situation. And once again, it underscores the fact that for Pat Robertson and for these other people involved in these endorsements of other candidates, including Mitt Romney, they're jettisoning the obvious alternative in this race, which is Congressman Ron Paul. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out because Ron Paul, of course, as many of you know by now, has established a record in regard to internet fundraising in this last quarter. What will Ron Paul's actual results be when we get to New Hampshire and when we get to Iowa and some of these other early caucuses and primaries? That, of course, all remains to be seen, but the fact of the matter is that he's already done much better than anyone could have forecasted on the basis of the media blackout on him and the fact that there is quite clearly a closing of the ranks in the establishment wing of political affairs in this country when it comes to covering Ron Paul or saying anything positive about him. But we're right back to something that I was talking about yesterday with a well-known American conservative and anti-Zionist leader based out on the West Coast, and it's this, that in the age of the Internet, we have a situation before us where those who formerly controlled access to information are having a much harder time doing so. And because they're having a harder time doing so, it means that somebody like Ron Paul can come in from the outside with the right ideas and the right presentation and without any of the connections of people like Rudolph Giuliani and Mitt Romney and can be more successful than would have been possible a generation ago before the Internet existed. Let's exploit that while we can. And let's support Ron Paul in the early primaries and caucuses and just see where this whole thing leads. We have a series of articles this morning that are well worth your time. One that comes to my mind immediately is something that's been out there for several days now, and it comes to the fore and what Mr. Buchanan has to say to us in regard to the whole question of a nation. How do we examine the whole issue of when a nation is dying? I think Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 7 have something to say about that in the Old Testament. Jesus has something to say about it in the New Testament in regard to certain things that would happen 40 years after his death and resurrection from the dead. Mr. Buchanan on the 4th of this month comes forth to tell us specifically that the euro, worth 83 cents in the early years of George W. Bush, is now at $1.45. That's it, folks. The euro, worth 83 cents in the early George W. Bush years, is now at $1.45. This is, of course, the lead sentence in Mr. Buchanan's latest story entitled Sinking Currency, Sinking Country. According to Pat Buchanan, the British pound is back up over $2, the highest level since the Carter era. The Canadian dollar, which used to be worth 65 cents, is worth more than the U.S. dollar for the first time in half a century. Oil is over $90 a barrel. Gold, down to $260 an ounce not so long ago, has hit $800. Have gold, silver, oil, the euro, the pound, and the Canadian dollar all suddenly soared in value in just a few years? No, says Pat Buchanan. The dollar has plummeted in value, more so in Bush's term than during any comparable period of U.S. history. Indeed, Mr. Bush is presiding over a worldwide abandonment of the American dollar. Is it all Bush's fault? Nope, says Pat Buchanan. The dollar is plunging because America has been living beyond her means, borrowing $2 billion a day from foreign nations to maintain her standard of living and to sustain the American imperium. The prime suspect in the death of the dollar, according to Pat Buchanan, is the massive trade deficits America has run up, some $5 trillion in total since the passage of NAFTA and the creation of the World Trade Organization in 1994. In 2006, that trade deficit hit $764 billion. The current account deficit, which includes the trade deficit, plus the net outflow of interest, dividends, capital gains, and foreign aid, hit $857 billion, 6.5% of GDP. As some of us have been writing for years, says Pat Buchanan, such deficits are unsustainable and must lead to a decline of the dollar. A sinking dollar means a poorer nation, and a sinking currency has historically been the mark of a sinking country. And a superpower with a sinking currency is a contradiction in terms. What does this mean for America and Americans? As nations realize that the dollars they are being paid for their products cannot buy in the world markets what they once did, they will demand more dollars for those goods. This will mean rising prices for the imports on which America has become more dependent than we have been since before the American Civil War. U.S. tourists traveling to the countries whence their ancestors came will find that the money that they saved up does not go as far as they thought. U.S. soldiers stationed overseas will find that the cost of rent, gasoline, food, clothing, and dining out takes larger and larger bites out of their paychecks. The people those U.S. soldiers defend will be demanding more and more of their money. U.S. diplomats stationed overseas, students, and businessmen are already facing tougher times. U.S. foreign aid does not go as far as it once did. And there is an element of comedy in seeing the United States going to Beijing to borrow dollars, thus putting our children deeper in debt, to send still more foreign aid to African despots who routinely vote the Chinese line at the United Nations. The Chinese, says Pat Buchanan, whose currency is tied to the dollar, and Japan will continue as long as they can to keep their currencies low against the dollar. For the Asians think long-term, and their goals are strategic. China, growing at 10% a year for two decades and now growing at close to 12%, is willing to take losses in the value of the dollars it holds to keep the U.S. technologies, factories, and jobs pouring in as their own exports capture America's markets from U.S. producers. The Japanese, says Buchanan, will take some loss in the value of their dollar hoard to take down Chrysler, Ford, and GM and capture the U.S. auto market as they captured our TV, camera, and computer chip markets. Asians understand that what is important is not who consumes the apples, but who owns the orchard. Other nations that have kept cash reserves and U.S. Treasury bonds and T-bills are watching the value of these assets sink. Not fools, they will begin, as many already have, to divest and diversify, taking in fewer dollars and more euros and yen. As more nations abandon the dollar, says Pat Buchanan, its decline will continue. The oil-producing and exporting nations with trade surpluses like China have also begun to take the stash of dollars they have and stuff them into sovereign wealth funds and use these immense and growing funds to buy up real assets in the United States, investment banks, and American companies. Nor is there any end in sight to the sinking of the dollar. For as foreigners demand more dollars for the oil and goods they sell us, the trade deficit will not fall. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mary Sterrett, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, will join us at approximately 8 o'clock this morning Central Time. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Pinch me, Bill. I can't believe it. A few months ago, I couldn't even afford gas for my car. And here we are with season tickets on the 50-yard line.
I know what you mean, John. I remember the day you saw my new car and asked me if I robbed Bill Gates. Our lives sure have changed since we discovered DidYouRobBillGates.com.
I was struggling to make ends meet. Now I've got a new car and a college fund for Lisa when she graduates from high school next year. And I owe it all to you because you told me about DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Hey, John, we all win when the money problems disappear. I want to tell everybody because the more people we have on the success team, the better it works. It's hard for the little guy these days. We pool our resources to level the playing field.
So the more people that go to www.DidYouRobBillGates.com, the more cash for everybody. What a concept.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains six DVDs that contain 10 different programs, two books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground or $30 outside the U.S.
Back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mary Sterrett, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, will join me at approximately 8 o'clock this morning Central Time. We're going to be talking about a series of stories, including this whole business of the Pat Robertson endorsement of Rudolph Giuliani. What is really going on here? I think we've already diagnosed what the nature of the situation is. And, of course, as we look at the Robertson endorsement of Giuliani, I'll also be talking with Mary Sterrett about the whole phenomenon of Paul Weyrich and Bob Jones III endorsing Mitt Romney. What is going on here, folks? Is the hold of the Zionist movement in the establishment wing of the conservative right in this country really what's behind this story? I think that's a part of it. I think there's another aspect of it as well, which is related to the first. And it's this. Guys like Pat Robertson and Paul Weyrich and Bob Jones III and Cal Thomas and so forth and so on, these guys like inside the Beltway power. They want to be a part of that. And if being a part of that means linking up with anybody who opposes Hillary Clinton, they're going to do that. In other words, well, it's more important that we have our own inside power agenda with the Rockefeller wing of the Republican Party than it is that we actually endorse somebody with some constitutional and moral principle. One does not know whether to laugh or to become violently sick at the stomach in regard to this whole turn of events, which is not surprising at all, but nonetheless very, very disgusting. I would like to say to you folks who are listening to this broadcast this morning that as the meaning of this becomes absolutely clear, even in the mainstream press, people are figuring out what's going on here. It behooves us more than ever to get behind Ron Paul. We've got to support him with our dollars. We've got to support him in networking with our friends. We've got to use the power of the Internet while we can still do it and see what we can do about cracking this power nexus. We need to, in the words of Howard Phillips to me a number of years ago when I was on his television show in Washington, D.C., we need to destroy the Republican Party. There are a lot of things we've got to get rid of in this country. The Republican Party is one of them. Any of you out there that believe that the Republican Party is a vehicle for conservative politics in this country, true conservative politics, need to wake up and smell the roses. The fact of the matter is that when we look at Pat Buchanan's story today about a sinking currency, sinking country, it is quite clear the direction in which the Bush wing of the Republican Party is taking us. It's quite clear that when we look at these so-called religious right leaders who are jumping into bed with Rudolph Giuliani and Mitt Romney, that something is dreadfully wrong. We need to be behind the one candidate in this race who has any commitment to constitutional principle whatsoever, and that's Ron Paul. And one of the things that will be interesting to watch is whether or not Ron Paul eventually becomes more explicit about the real story behind the story, which is the Zionist control of the American political process, both in foreign policy as well as in his control of the American news media, the American television stations, the American political process. Trace the dollars, folks. Look at the Federal Election Commission lists and you'll see what I'm talking about. All of this has played a role in why we are where we are, both in domestic and in foreign policy, and why our culture is absolutely in the tank. Will Ron Paul begin identifying this? It'll be interesting to see. He's staying away from it for right now, quite clearly, I think, because to say anything about it at this juncture would be to bring upon himself the kind of thing that the establishment is just waiting to spring on him. There will be all kinds of false charges leveled against him, of course, as the campaign progresses. Right now, Ron Paul wants to play it very, very carefully in what he says and what he doesn't say. This is my best guess in regard to this whole business of Zionism and the Israeli lobby. Will he begin talking about it in the earlier Republican primaries? We'll have to keep a close eye on that. But at some point, I think he's going to have to do it. It's very, very difficult to talk about the trade deficits, to talk about the budget deficits, to talk about the decline of the dollar, to talk about what has happened to our foreign policy in the Middle East, without more directly fingering those people who are responsible. And it seems that at some juncture, that's going to have to be brought into greater focus by the Ron Paul campaign. For now, I think he's keeping quiet about this for strategic reasons, but at some point, he's going to have to start talking about it. The only question is when. And of course, his advisors, I think, have played things very, very well up to now. We will leave it to their judgment as to when they begin focusing upon this question more narrowly and doing so in public. They know they've got a lot of enemies out there, and these enemies are awaiting for the right opportunity to pounce upon them. We'll see again what happens in coming weeks and months as this so-called campaign drama begins to unfold. There is a must-read story today, by the way, at the so-called Palestine Chronicle. James Petras brings it to us. It's entitled Deadly Embrace, Zion Power and War. It's part one of a series that goes for at least two parts, if not three parts. This is part one, and you can find it at PalestineChronicle.com. An absolutely essential piece, and I'm going to read a portion of it this morning here in just a minute. But suffice it to say that going back to the No More Wars for Israel conference that was held in Southern California 3 weeks ago, Mark Glenn and Hesham Talawi and I have been doing some private chatting with one another. about where we proceed from here on this subject. There are a number of things I can't talk about on the air, but I'll say a couple of things about our private chats when I come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mary Sterrett, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, will be with us in about half an hour. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word, monastery, is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Do you have a high electric bill? Do you use an electric company that just provides you expensive electricity? Not anymore. Visit www.energyswap.goambit.com and take advantage of a new way to save on your monthly energy bill. Ambit Energy provides the same reliable service as your current provider and the best rewards program in the industry. Save up to 20% on your electric bill. Rates as low as 10.99 cents per kilowatt. No cost to switch. Flat rate plans. Reward program. What more? What could you ask for? How about a free gift? Try Ambit Energy Service and receive a free getaway for two. Sign up today. 888-238-6397. That's 888-238-6397. Visit our website at www.energyswap.goambit.com and use the tool generator to calculate how much you can save on your monthly energy bill. 888-238-6397. Currently in Texas and New York only. Other states coming soon.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mary Sterrett, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, will be with us in approximately half an hour from now. We're going to be talking about a series of news stories, including, once again, this insane phenomenon, or perhaps not so insane in terms of the logic of it, of Pat Robertson's endorsing Rudolph Giuliani. And of Paul Weyrich and Bob Jones III endorsing Mitt Romney. What is going on with these so-called religious right leaders? The fact of the matter is, it becomes abundantly clear that if you are supporting of Israel's policies in the Middle East, and if you are a tool of the Zionist lobby, you too can receive the endorsement of a so-called Christian right leader in the United States if you're running for president, or for that matter, for virtually anything else. You can be pro-homosexual, pro-abortion, pro-gun control. You can really dig these American trade and budget deficits. You can advocate all kinds of unconstitutional expansions of the role of the federal government in our lives. You can be a globalist and support the New World Order, as Mr. Giuliani clearly does with all of these globalist trade treaties, and as Mr. Giuliani clearly does in his endorsement of the North American Union. Mr. Giuliani, of course, is also, through his law firm, supporting these foreign companies, representing these foreign companies that want to charge you to use your own roads in places like Texas. So Rudolph Giuliani, of course, is a tool of outfits like Centra of Spain and Macquarie of Australia. Mr. Giuliani is quite clearly a tool of globalist interests heading toward one world government. That has a rather antichrist tinge to it, doesn't it? And yet there's something going on here with Mr. Robertson and with Mr. Cal Thomas and with Bob Jones III and with Paul Weyrich. Are we really where 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 says that we are? God will send them a strong delusion that they might believe a lie. My good friend Dale Crowley says that in his view that has something to do with the larger issue of these so-called Christian right leaders supporting Zionism and the New World Order as a part of the delusion. I happen to agree with that perspective. We're seeing biblical eschatology fulfilled before our eyes, but not in the way that John Hagee and others want us to believe that it is. The fact of the matter is, they're not part of the solution. Hagee and his minions, certainly Pat Robertson and his minions, are part of the problem. And folks, when we consider this whole question of Zionism and the role of the Jewish lobby in this country, and when we ask ourselves why we talk about it to the extent that we do on this show and Mike Piper's show and Hesham Talawi's show, we do so because it is the one constituency out there that connects all of these different threads. If you don't like American imperialist foreign policy abroad and especially in the Middle East, if you have a serious problem with what we're doing in Palestine and in Lebanon and what we're talking about doing to Iran, if you have a problem with the role of the abortion industry in this country and the role of the homosexual rights crowd and the hate crime speech people and what has happened to the American educational process and governmentally affiliated schools, if all of this bothers you, what is the leading constituency that is out there that has a disproportionate financial and logistical and political support for all of these various entities that have destroyed this country? Think about it, folks. The answer is abundantly clear. Again, back to this whole question of James Petras this morning in Palestine Chronicle. This is a must-read series. You must take a look at this. It's entitled Deadly Embrace, Zion Power and War. In part one, James Petras asks the rhetorical question, if the official political and military justifications for the U.S. colonial wars in Iraq and Afghanistan ring hollow and the other economic explanations for the war put forth mostly but not exclusively by critics of the Bush administration. Petras says that explanations for the U.S. attack on Iraq range from military political pretexts to accounts focusing on geopolitical and economic interests. The original official explanation was the now discredited claim that Saddam Hussein possessed chemical, biological, and other weapons of mass destruction which threatened the United States, Israel, and the Middle East. Subsequent to the U.S. military occupation, when no WMD were discovered, Washington justified the invasion and occupation by citing the removal of a dictator and the establishment of a prosperous democracy in the Arab world. The imposition of a colonial puppet regime, says James Petras, propped up by an imperial occupation force of over 200,000 troops and irregular death squads, which have killed close to 1 million Iraqi civilians, forced over 4 million into exile, and impoverished over 95% of the population, puts the lie to that line of argument. The latest line of justification, says Petras, revolves around the notion that the U.S. occupation is necessary to, quote, prevent a civil war, unquote. Most Iraqis and military experts think the presence of the U.S. colonial occupation army is the cause of violent conflict, particularly the U.S. military's devastating attacks on civilians, their financing of rival tribal leaders and Kurdish mercenaries, and their contracting of local police and military to repress the population. Since most Americans, not to speak of the rest of the world, are not convinced by these specious arguments, the Washington regime rationalizes its continued war and occupation by citing the need for a colonial military victory to maintain its world and regional status as a superpower and to assure its Middle East client regimes that Washington can defend their ruling cliques and their hegemonic ally, Israel. The Bush White House and pro-Israel congressional leaders claim a victory in Iraq will bolster Washington's image as a successful global anti-terrorist, read, anti-insurgent regime. These post-facto justifications, says James Petras, have lost credibility as the war drags on. Popular resistance grows in Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine, Lebanon, Somalia, Thailand, the Philippines, Pakistan, and elsewhere. The longer the war continues, the greater the economic cost and the demoralization and depletion of military personnel, the more difficult the task of sustaining the capacity to intervene in defense of the empire. If the official political and military justifications for the U.S. colonial wars in Iraq and Afghanistan ring hollow and convince few, what are the other economic explanations for the war put forth mostly but not exclusively by critics of the Bush administration? The major focus, says Petras, of the economic determinants of the war centers on the issue of oil, as in war for oil. These explanations in turn break down into several variants. The first and most popular is that the big U.S. oil companies were behind the war, that Bush and Cheney were pressured by their big oil handlers into launching the war so that U.S. oil companies could seize the nationally owned Iraqi oil fields and refineries. A second, slightly modified version argued that the White House was not pressured by big oil, but acted on their behalf as a reflex action. This is put forth, says James Petras, to explain why the spokesmen for big oil multinationals were so conspicuously absent from the media and halls of Congress in the lead-up to the war. A third version argued that the U.S. went to war to secure oil for U.S. national security interests threatened by Saddam Hussein. This explanation cites the danger of Saddam Hussein closing down the Strait of Hormuz, invading the Gulf states, inciting revolts in Saudi Arabia, and/or reducing the flow of Middle East oil to the U.S. and its allies. In other words, says Petras, the geopolitics of the Middle East dictated that a non-client regime was a threat to U.S., European, and Japanese access to oil. This is apparently the latest argument put forth by Alan Greenspan, a former proponent of the WMD propaganda. The major advocates of the war for oil, or WFO argument, fail several empirical tests, says Petras, namely that the oil companies were not actively supporting the war via propaganda, congressional lobbying, or through any other policy vehicle. Secondly, the proponents of WFO failed to explain the efforts by major oil companies to develop economic ties with Iraq prior to the invasion and were, in fact, working through clandestine third parties to trade in Iraqi oil. Thirdly, all the major oil companies operating in the Middle East were mainly concerned with political stability, the liberalization of the economic policies of the region, and the opening of oil services for foreign investors. The big oil companies' strategies were to advance their global interests through the ongoing liberalization process in the Middle East and conquering new markets and oil resources through their formidable market power, investments, and technology. The onset of the U.S. invasion of Iraq was viewed with anxiety and concern as a military action which would destabilize the entire region, increase hostility to their interests throughout the Gulf, and slow down the liberalization process. Not a single CEO from the entire petroleum industry viewed the U.S. invasion as a positive national security measure because they understood that Saddam Hussein, after over a decade of economic and military sanctions and frequent bombing of his military installations and infrastructure throughout the Clinton years, was not in a position to launch any acts of aggression against Gulf oil companies or states. Moreover, the oil companies had several real prospects of developing lucrative service and commercial oil contracts with Saddam Hussein's regime in the lead-up to the war. It was the U.S. government, says James Petras, pressured by the Zionist Power Configuration, or ZPC, which pushed legislation blocking, through sanctions, big oil from consummating these economic agreements with Iraq. The argument that big oil promoted the war for its own benefit fails the empirical test. A corollary to that is that big oil has failed to benefit from the U.S. occupation because of the heightened conflict, continuous sabotage, the predictable resistance of the Iraqi oil workers to privatization, and the general insecurity, instability, and hostility of the Iraqi people. The American left jumped on Alan Greenspan's declaration that the Iraq war was about oil as some kind of confirmation in the absence of any evidence. Yet every day that has transpired since the beginning of the war 5 years ago demonstrates that big oil not only did not promote the invasion, but has failed to secure a single oil field despite the presence of 160,000 U.S. troops, 30,000 Pentagon State Department paid mercenaries, and a corrupt puppet regime. As of September the 19th, 2007, the Financial Times of London featured an article on the conspicuous absence of the oil majors in Iraq. Quote, "Big Oil plays a waiting game over Iraq's reserves, September 19th. Only a few small companies have contracts in northern Iraq or Kurdistan, which has only 3% of Iraq's oil reserves. Big Oil did not start the Iraq war, nor has Big Oil benefited from the war. The reason why Big Oil did not support the war is the same reason they haven't invested after the occupation. Quote, "The level of violence is still unacceptably high. If anything, the prospects of agreement appear to be receding as tensions between parties grow," unquote. Big Oil's worst nightmares leading up to the Zionist-influenced war have all been utterly confirmed. Whereas Big Oil's negotiations and third-party deals with pre-war Iraq provided a stable and consistent flow of oil and revenue, the war has not only reduced these revenues to zero, says James Petras, but has all but eliminated any new options for the next decade. Despite the war, liberalization elsewhere in the region has proceeded, and U.S. oil and financial interests have advanced despite the increased obstacles and hostilities which have grown out of the U.S. slaughter of Muslims. Big Oil, Texas billionaires, even big contributors to the Bush family political campaigns were no match for the ZPC when it came to Middle East war policy. They lacked the inside and outside power, the disciplined grassroots organization of Jewish community organizations to overcome the Zionist warmongering power over Congress, their position in strategic executive offices, and their army of academic scribes from Harvard, Yale, and Hopkins churning out bellicose propaganda in the U.S. media. What is striking about the position papers and op-ed reprints in the Daily Alert is the total absence of any deviation from official Israeli pro-war positions. Whether it is killing children in Jenin, bombing population centers in Lebanon, shelling Arab families relaxing at the beach in Gaza, the Daily Alert simply echoes the official Israeli line and blatant lies about human shields, accidents, gunmen among school children, and self-induced atrocities. Never in the entire period analyzed, says James Petras, is there a single critical article questioning Israel's massive displacement of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. No crime against humanity is too great for the presidents of the leading American Jewish organizations to defend. It is this slavish obedience to the official Israeli policy that marks out the Zionist Power Configuration, or ZPC, as something much more than just another lobby, as its left apologists and even Walton Mearsheimer claim. The ZPC is much more sinister, both as a transmission belt for the policies and interests of a colonial power hell-bent on domination in the Middle East, and is the most serious authoritarian threat to our democratic freedoms. No single individual, says James Petras, who dares criticize, can escape the long hand of the pro-Israel authoritarians. Booksellers, listen to this one, folks, booksellers are picketed, editors are intimidated, university presses and distributors are threatened, university presidents are blackmailed, local and national candidates are browbeaten and smeared, meetings are canceled and venues are pressured, faculty are fired or denied promotion, corporations are blacklisted, union pension funds are raided, theater performances and concerts are canceled, and the list of repressive actions taken by these authoritarian Zionist organizations at the national and local levels runs on, arousing fear among some, anger among many more, and a slowly burning resentment and growing awareness among the silent majority. The second geopolitical version of oil for war focuses on the national security issues. After the first Gulf War in 1991 and 11 years of economic sanctions and military disarmament, Iraq was an impoverished, weak nation, partially dismembered by the U.S.-backed Kurdish enclave in the north, constant U.S. bombing, and overflights. Iraq was severely bombed several times during the Clinton regimes, and over 1 million of its citizens, including an estimated 500,000 children, died prematurely from conditions related to the U.S.-imposed deprivation of food and essential medical and water treatment supplies. Before the invasion in 2003, says James Petras, Iraq did not even control its shorelines, airspace, or even a third of its national territory. As the U.S. invasion demonstrated, Saddam's military lacked the most elementary capacity to mount any defense in a conventional war. Not even a single fighter plane presented a threat to any offshore U.S. client or to the Strait of Hormuz. The stiff resistance to the U.S. came later in the form of irregular forces engaged in guerrilla warfare, not from any organized force established by the Ba'athist regime. In other words, no matter how far the concept of national security is stretched to include U.S. bases, oil installations, client rulers, and transport and shipping lanes in the Middle East, Saddam Hussein was clearly not a threat. If, however, the concept of national security is redefined to mean the physical elimination of any potential opponent of U.S. and Israeli domination in the region, then Saddam Hussein could be labeled a national security threat. But that, says James Petras, takes the discussion of the explanation for the U.S. war against Iraq to another terrain, and a discussion of the political forces that manipulated the phony WMD and war for oil propaganda to justify a war for U.S. and Israeli hegemony in the Middle East. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Introducing the world's best air purifier. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does in cleaning and purifying the air in your home. Pet, cooking, cigarette, or even cigar smoke is no problem for this air purifier. It's so powerful, it kills molds and mildews as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. There are no moving parts to break, no plates to clean, and no filters to replace. Call 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Or visit the website now, www.aranair.us. That's www.aranair.us. Again, www.aranair.us.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Gasoline prices are out of control. Are you tired of giving your hard-earned dollars to the major oil companies? Did you know that the oil companies have developed special products to increase mileage in their own vehicles? Very few consumers even know such products exist. This technology is backed by hundreds of thousands of dollars of testing that the oil companies have run. Yet they don't want you to know about them. SFR, the leader in fuel products, has obtained this technology. And we are so convinced you'll notice the savings that we will give you a bottle for free. SFR is not an injector cleaner or typical gas treatment found at your local store. SFR works so well that it even improves mileage on new cars. Just pay a minimal shipping and handling charge. If you're not completely delighted with the savings, we'll even refund the shipping charge. Share the oil company's secret and get SFR now. What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-USE-SFR-1. That's 1-888-873-7371 today.
back. This is Mark Ankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mary Sturt, the National Political Communications Director of the Constitution Party, will be with me in just a few minutes. Among other things, we're going to be talking about this whole phenomenon of Pat Robertson's endorsement of Rudolph Giuliani and what we should make of the fact that Mitt Romney has received the endorsement of Paul Weyrich and of Bob Jones III. We've been talking, of course, a little bit this morning about James Petras' essay at the Palestine Chronicle entitled Deadly Embrace, Zion Power and War, Part 1. Absolutely essential, folks, that you read that essay. Some of these points we were trying to get across to people a few weeks ago at the No More Wars for Israel conference. Let me say something about that conference, by the way. I'll be saying more about it in this next week. I've been staying somewhat silent in regard to my perceptions of that conference. I think there were some outstanding presentations of that conference, even with all the external opposition to the promotion of that event in Southern California, and as well as some of the internal divisions in our own movement in regard to the best strategy for promoting the No More Wars for Israel concept. I thought the best presentations certainly included those by Michael Collins Piper and Hesham Talawi, and also Phil Turney's presentation as a member of the USS Liberty Survivors Organization. By the way, Mark Glenn has been posting both the Hesham Talawi speech as well as the Phil Turney speech online. Both of those are available to you now. I think that those were two of the real highlights of this conference. And if you get a chance, take a look at those. Read the transcript of what Dr. Talawi has said. Take a look at what Phil Turney has said as well. And you'll begin to see, if you haven't seen it already, the central importance of supporting this No More Wars for Israel concept. Hesham Talawi, Mark Glenn, and I are starting a process of strategizing. That's about all I'll say about this at this point. We're trying to pool all of our resources in regard to things that we learned in Southern California 3 weeks ago, both good things as well as bad things. And in this regard, we've been asking ourselves a fundamental question. Who are the most significant leaders that the three of us know worldwide who should be involved in promoting this movement with us? How do we get this movement funded? Where should we locate this movement in terms of an international headquarters? What kinds of yearly activities should we promote, including the next No More Wars for Israel conference? Certainly one of the essential resources that comes to mind in regard to all of these matters is Matthias Chang out there in Malaysia. He's somebody that we're bringing into the conversation. There are at least 10, 12, 15 other people that I could think of who are also being brought into these conversations for planning purposes. That's about all I'll say at this point. But keep an eye on events as the weeks and months progress. We hope to have something out there that is going to bring this conflict to an entirely new level. We'll be back with Mary Sturt of the Constitution Party. This is Mark Ankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
With recent